Where's the jingle?
Where the
it's
hype
stuck
at?
In my head to the point that you annoy me. Annoy me.
Annoy me, damn it. What we need is a jingle to this, right? We have a song, like we need a jingle to our Nas. That's what we need.
I hear you, Dan. I'm listening to you. I'm writing it down right now. All right? I'm on it.
Let's get on it, man.
More jingles.
Welcome back to Not a Strong Start, a podcast by filmmakers who talk movies, television, and
cancel jingles
and stop singing jingles. I'm your host, in and out. Wait, and in again.
I am not your host, here and gone, and stay gone.
Like a fart.
Yeah. And I'm your other guy, here for a good time. Not a long one.
That's when you need to take a pooper in the bathroom.
In this week's episode.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Why you change your name, Dan? That wasn't your original name?
No, because I can't sit there and give out false advertisements, okay? If I go with Minuteman, which is originally what I was going to go with, that's just false advertisement. If anybody knows me, they know that's just, you know, wrong advertisement right there. But
and
in and out,
and he's got a solid
three pump chump, baby.
That's how we do it around here on the Nas channel, as we know. That's our personal record
in
here,
out
but...
and again,
in out and in again.
We rinse and repeat.
In this week's episode, we're going to be talking about some of the best performances, where like very small performances, but they were so epic, so crucial, so much that we had to give a dedicated episode to this. But first, we're going to hit you with the current event.
Boom. All right. So, as we always seem to get news on reboots and remakings or reimagining, and I just want to touch on one that was recently announced that I feel personally is not going to be successful. And that is Scary Movie. It's supposedly they're going to reboot that franchise and bring it back again. Yeah. Now I know me personally, we've talked about this plenty of time. Comedy, acceptable comedy has kind of gone out the window with everyone having a fear of being canceled or boycotted, or just an uproar happening. So I don't know if that type of comedy is gonna fly again. They might have to dumb it down heavily, but then is it Scary Movie? It's supposed to be absurd, kind of offending comedy for some people. What are you guys' thoughts? Let's start with you, Dan.
I think this comedy, this whole like overly played satire, like they way overdid it with that. And even with that franchise, the first two movies were pretty good. That was it. They had like four or five just duds of sequels. Like, do we really need to get it? Anna Faris, I thought, was like the best part of that franchise in the first couple movies. I thought she was great in it. She was like a nice surprise casting. I didn't know who she was before those movies. Are they going to bring her back? Probably not. Okay, so if they're going to reimagine this, and if they're going to go for the younger crowd, you know who they're going to target. They're going to target influencers. They're probably going to get people that are TikTokers. Like, that's who they're going to go for. That's who the celebrities are now for this younger generation. You know, the people that didn't ride dinosaurs. That's who it is. So, no, we don't need to see it, Jose, to answer your question. No, I can go off on a huge reason why, but then that would suck up the rest of this episode and we wouldn't have enough time to talk about great performances. So I'll leave it at that. George.
Especially, we probably won't have the Wayans brothers included in this.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, if they're not attached to it, it's not going to work. That's why all the sequels didn't work, is because they didn't, they lost the magic. I remember when they would promote part two, three, whatever crap. It was like two of the producers from part one, but no Wayans brothers. Just two of the producers, some guys that, you know, we're not even going to put their names. Just know that they helped produce something on this past movie that was great.
And then you find out there were associate producers. All they did was walk their dogs.
It's like, it's just that guy who just came in the last day. It's like, here's a few bucks. I'm out. Make me some money.
From three people who watched the first Scary Movie, here comes Scary Movie 5.
And then we're looking like, is that us? We all watched it.
Which, it's too bad. Like, that genre, it has its audience, you know? Because all that is going back to, like, Airplane and Naked Gun. That's it's that kind of comedy, you know? And that, if they gave a Naked Gun's getting remade with Liam Neeson. I saw something about that happening.
It is.
You know? So it's like, there's an audience for it, for sure. I'm not that guy. So someone will like it, just not me. Like, I've never really been a big fan of that stuff. I kind of like part one of Scary Movie, but I'm gonna pass on this probably regardless.
I agree on that. I enjoyed the first Scary Movie. The second one, you know, also to a
Yeah.
degree, but that exaggerated like type of comedy like that that's like really ridiculous, it tends to not be what I gravitate to.
Especially like the second one. The first one was the better film of the franchise, but the second one had a lot of memorable callbacks, right? Because it's the one with the
Yeah.
guy with the little hand,
In my
right?
strong
My strong
hand.
hand, yeah.
That one, or even the whole basketball. I mean, you see them doing like the whole stupid thing, like in the Haunted Mansion. So the second one wasn't bad. You know what I mean? Like, for it being like a parody movie and what it wasn't bad. The Wayans brothers were still great in it. You know, you still had what was it? Regina Hall, you know,
Yeah.
was in it.
Yeah.
She was really good.
Because you know what it is? It's
Who are they gonna
sketches. That's
get?
what it is.
Yeah, it's
The
just a
Wayans
series of
brothers are great at
sketches.
sketches. They're like, all right,
Yeah.
how can we do a bunch of sketches in this one movie? And
Yeah.
that's, I think that's what made it kind of work. Not everyone has that mentality the way they do. Like, they just got it on lock. That family is born comedy, you know? And it's just like, if you don't have it in you, it's not that easy to do. Granted, it's not, there's not a lot of source material to make fun of these days. There's lots of new scary movies to do. So there could be some good gold to mine, but if you don't got the right people behind it, like, you need comedians. You need people who know comedy. You don't need people who make money. People who make money don't know how to be funny.
Yeah, and
No, yeah.
things you need to include things that people are gonna attach to, like Dan said, the second one might not be an amazing movie, but you had memorable things that people remembered. Like even a fun fact, I don't know if you remember, I think it was with Regina Hall, her fight with like the ghost and all that. There was these two female wrestlers in WWE who actually recreated that fight in
Yes, I
their
saw
match.
that. I
Yeah.
saw that.
Yeah. The
Yeah.
only people who saw Scary Movie were like, this looks very familiar. And then they put it side by side.
I'm always a fan of them doing comedy because, you know, as we've talked about a lot, they're not doing it enough. But it doesn't it kind of feel like there's a change in the tides a little bit, right? Like, you're starting to notice them trying to push a little more comedies, and comedies is more on the production level. You know, they've had a little bit of success with some of these comedies, so feels like the tide's turning a little bit. I just hope we get some good comedic actors that are behind this.
Hey everyone, let's take a moment to talk about where I've been getting these new Not a Strong Start t-shirts from. Head on over to itsnaz.threadless.com, the only place where you can get Not a Strong Start merch. Whether it's our newly designed mascot or just your favorite movie logo now with some Nas flair, you can rep your Nas love on tee, hoodie, mug, rug, and so much more. So get yours today. Just click on that link below and have yourself a strong start. And not a strong, have a not a strong start, have a start that's strong, but not so strong. You know.
Let's get into our main topic then. So we're going to talk about, again, some of the great performances that we've seen from actors. And Jose, take us away. You're going to be leading this with the segment.
Yeah, this is all about efficiency. These are actors who took their performance and they didn't have an hour of screen time, an hour and a half of screen time. This isn't Castaway where you just see Tom Hanks for an entire movie and he's got all that time to get your attention and develop this character. These are people who were given a short time and had to make the most of it. So again, all about efficiency. Let's get right into it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you guys the actor in the movie. It's all well-known performances, and then give you guys some options, see if you can guess what their actual screen time was. So first here, let's start with Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight. How long was he on screen? Was he on screen for 22 minutes, 33 minutes, or 45 minutes? Anyone feel free to guess.
I think 22. I know it was like a low number. I thought it probably even less than that, but I'd say 22, I think.
I was gonna go
George?
with 22 also, but I guess just to be different, I'll go with answer B of 33, you said.
Yeah.
So I'll go with that just to be different.
Correct response is 33. So he was
Oh.
only, his screen time was only about a quarter of the movie because the movie was what, like about 2 hours, right? Like maybe
Yeah.
Yeah.
even
It's
more.
got some length to it.
Yeah. So about a quarter of the movie is all Heath Ledger was in. And this movie, one of the main things that is remembered for is Heath Ledger's performance. George, let's start with you on these. What were your thoughts on his performance and what he was able to do with such a short time frame?
You know, when you said his name, I was thinking, like, Heath Ledger, it's like he's 50% of that movie. But then you said to mention the time, it's like, damn, I guess you think about it, he's not on screen that much. but he feels like he's the whole movie. Like, yep. It's kind of ridiculous. Like,
you're waiting
like,
for him.
I'm like, as you're talking, I'm going through it in my head. It's like, wait a second, there's this scene and that scene and this scene. It's like, well, how is he not in more of this thing? Like, he doesn't even say anything. Just think about that scene in the hospital, like when he's walking away as the nurse and everything, he has the little detonator. He doesn't say a word. And just him waiting for it to explode at all his mannerisms. And knowing, like, now down the line, that was actually all improv, and that really was a late explosion, and he just went with it. Like, that kind of just know-how to lose yourself in a role, not every actor has that capability. You know, some other actor may have just been like, all right, let's do this again, guys. You know, like, they made a broken character, but not him. He just, like, he's still using it. It's like, I'm still in it. Like, I'm not going to lose this feeling. What would the Joker do? Like, who knows what he's thinking? But that's what you start thinking. It's like, wow, what would the Joker do in that moment? Okay. And I was like, that's what he brought to the table with that movie. It's like every inch of him just was in it, 100%.
What about you, Dan?
I think it adds more to the mystique of the performance, right? Like, that's what I like. So had you had too much of him, then it would have been overly saturated. And I think the fact that we kept them to like about a quarter of the movie, because even when you kind of think about it, outside of that first opening shot or that opening scene that we have of him, it takes a good minute before we bring him back. So I rewatched the movie maybe a couple months ago, and I realized that when I was sitting there watching it, I'm like, man, we're like 40, 45 minutes in the movie, and he finally made his return back to the movie. Like, it took that long for him to come, but it's so memorable that you're kind of anticipating and waiting for him to come back that it's like a nice treat when he comes. And I just think his performance is amazing. I've talked about it a lot on our, you know, on our podcast, where I think he gives one of my favorite villain performances I've ever seen. He's so captivating in that role. And at the time of his casting, I didn't think he had the chops to do it. Like, I knew he was a pretty good actor, but I didn't know he had that in him. Like, bravo. And I know he won his Oscar, you know, sadly after he passed, but I don't want that to get tainted. Like, that's the reason why he won. I think he was very well deserving of that role. And the man deserved all of his flowers and all of his kudos. But man, he captivated and completely stole that movie. And in my opinion, even stole that franchise. Like, of those three, like, that's the movie I talk about. That's the character I talk about. And he outdid Jack Nicholson's Joker, which was awesome. So
I will say, I kind of like wonder now, how long was Jack Nicholson's screen time in the original Batman?
That's a good point.
Like, I kind of want to compare that now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Jose comes in well.
According to my calculations, like the man in the chair.
That's why he has the glasses on. Okay, there we go.
That's why.
See, I have it on for necessity. He has it on for professional.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson was 39 minutes, so 6 minutes more than Heath Ledger.
But probably a higher percentage, because that movie probably wasn't over 2 hours like the other one.
Huh. Yeah, he was about, I think, like 32% of that movie. Yeah, but he was in it long. He was in it more than Michael Keaton. Then Michael Keaton was like 34 minutes in that movie.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Before I found all this information out, if you would have asked me, I kind of like George, I would have put it closer to maybe 50% of the movie, closer to an hour. So it's crazy that it's that little, a quarter of the movie. And I think what makes it seem more is the fact that the little bit that he was on, every scene that he was in, he was the main person in that. He was the one grabbing your attention. Even in the scenes with Batman in there, your attention is on Heath Ledger. And I think the fact that every time he was on screen, for how little amount of time it was, your attention was fully on him, makes you remember his performance and makes it seem a lot more than what it actually was time-wise. And I think that is one of the same things we'll probably run into with some of the other characters within this list, is how much attention can you grab in as little time as possible? How much are you going to make me like or dislike your character or that emotion in there? Like, you have little time to make me not be indifferent towards your character. And he was able to do that from the first scene to the last scene that he was in. For the next one, we have Louise Fletcher. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. She was the nurse. How long do you guys think she was in there? You know what? I'm not going to give choices. That makes it too easy.
Yeah.
You guys just tell me how much of that movie you think she was in.
Okay,
George.
So Oops, go ahead.
Okay, so this was Nurse Ratched, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. It's been a long time I've seen this movie. Fuck.
Oof.
Yeah, it's
You are
been a
due, my
long time.
friend. You are due, my
Yeah,
friend. The movie's
yeah.
amazing.
I'm gonna go with an absurd number of like 10 minutes.
Oh, Rick, well, all right,
Yeah.
then.
I'm going.
I take longer to take a shit.
Yeah.
All right, so this is one that I would swear was in the movie at least half the time. Like I would think, you know what I mean? But
That's why I'm going
that,
opposite of my feelings. The
yeah. But then when
last
I,
guess, I was like, I gotta go ridiculous.
yeah. But then when you sit and you kind of think about it, maybe let me go back to the 22 minute.
This ain't a competition, so you go with what you're feeling, not
Let's go
like based off
22
of the game.
minutes. Let's go 22 minutes.
Feelings, no facts. All right, let's do this.
Yeah.
Okay,
222.
fair enough. Well, somehow Dan was on the nose,
Wow.
22 minutes, which
Yeah.
was like 17% of the movie. That's it.
Yeah.
But yeah, here we go. And Dan, we'll start with you on this one. What were your thoughts on that performance and what she was able to do with those 22 minutes?
Yeah, so she is like the perfect embodiment of what's wrong and how like isolated and everything that the Jack Nicholson character is going through. Like I love that movie. I think it's great, but without having a true antagonist for his character, the movie would have been a lot more bland and boring, and it would have been a little more cliche in a lot of areas. She brought such a realness and like a hatred, like you hated her. Like you hated her. Like that was one of the first time I'm like, you B word as a kid. I'm like, you are such a like that's how it felt as like a kid. Like, man, but like she was so good, and I think her acting is so well done in it. She gives such a phenomenal performance. You know, I know I use that word a lot on our podcast, but man, she really did a really good job with it. And Nurse Ratched, even the name Ratched is awesome. Like the way that she antagonizes him throughout the movie, and like you start to feel for him because he's not a good guy, he's not a good character, but yet the way that Jack Nicholson is, he's so charming that you still want to see the bad guy win in a certain way. And he found a loophole that he thinks he can go without having to serve prison time and all that. But man, Nurse Ratched, like play, you know, she pays him back, and she drives a lot of the scenes that we see. And even when you see him trying to act crazy and acting goofy, her energy level is so opposite of him in that scene, but it works so well. It's like perfect, the whole yin yang thing going on. Great.
I
What
say,
about
Dan,
you,
it's
Joy?
funny you mentioned like you didn't almost didn't want to say the B word. If there's a few things I do remember is I remember watching this with my mom when I was young. So I was a kid, single digits, and I remember actually saying it's like, "Yo, that lady's a bitch." And my mom's like, "Yeah, that's right. That's correct. Like that's the right time to use that word." It's like, but yeah, like I remember her just being like the epitome of evil almost, and it's like. As a kid watching it, because that's like last time I watched it. I was a kid when I watched this movie. I haven't seen it again since. So all I have is that picture in my head of like, wow, that's evil, and she shouldn't be working there. How did she get that job? That's all I'm thinking watching this, you know. Never mind what he did. It's like, how is she in that position? You know, and I think it also just helped encapsulate that time period really well of how things were like in mental institutes, like they weren't handled well. You know, like people were mistreated and they probably went crazier than they should have because of people like that. And I think her performance probably inspired the reason why we ended up getting a show on Netflix. You know, I think if she wasn't as good as she was in that role, I don't think we would have got a show,
A hundred
honestly.
percent.
You
A
know?
hundred percent. Yeah, 100%.
See, I don't know if, you know, the writers sitting down writing that, if they even expected this character will blow up as much as they did. And a lot has to do with her performance. To be able in 22 minutes to get pretty much the majority of people that watch that movie to absolutely hate you with all their guts, like completely. Like, you know, it probably took her 5 minutes to make you dislike her, 15 minutes to make you hate her, and then 22 minutes to make you want her gone, like forever. Like, it is so good. And we talked here before, you know, I like a good villain. I like a good villain better than a good protagonist. And when you have Jack Nicholson on the other end and you're able to elicit such a response that you kind of match Jack Nicholson. That's not going to be easy to do on screen. And she was able to do that in 22 minutes.
And you see her torturing, mentally torturing these poor men that are at this mental hospital. Like, it's the mental torture and the anguish that she's putting them through just makes you, because like you start to feel bad for the inmates, you know, you see them and it's like, man, you start to feel bad because you know that they feel somewhat helpless and their mental illness and their disorders is stopping them from being able to fully process a lot of what's going on. And the fact that she just keeps turning that knife, it's like, man, stop.
So some of them had a very childlike personality,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
You know, so like when you pair that with her.
Especially Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
He's like a sweet little teddy bear.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It makes you empathize and understand why he became the Joker. And it's like, okay, I get it. I get it. Why you lost it.
Yeah.
All right, here we go for the next one. This one's for Dan. This one's for Dan here.
I think
I'm gonna know. Xenomorph and Alien.
Oh, okay.
All right. How much screen time? Don't think with your mind. Think with your heart.
Damn. In Alien.
That one I know is not in there Alien. Long. Yeah, the first Alien, it's in there for a short time.
I'm gonna say 9 minutes.
Okay, George.
I'm gonna go with 12.
4 minutes.
Oh my God. That's laughable.
Oh,
I thought 9 was too low. I was like, ooh. Right?
4 minutes. My coffee isn't even done in 4 minutes when I put it on the table.
I was like, I pee longer than that. What the?
3 days later. Many months later.
Yeah. I've heard you. You do pee longer than that.
That if you think watching that movie, and even to this day, the tension and the fear factor, and the, you know, that creepy atmosphere that's created with this, the xenomorph around, and knowing it's going to be around every corner, and everyone being terrified, and you think, and that's 4 minutes of the movie that you actually see it. And, you know, that's a big problem that newer horror movies run into, is they show too much sometimes. You have trailers now that show their monster more than the xenomorph was shown in that entire movie. And that goes to show sometimes less is more when you're trying to create tension and fear in there. Just like they were like scared, like, where is it going to be? Where is it going to be? Us in the audience were like, where is it going to be? Where is it going to be? And then when it showed up, the impact is higher because you went, I don't remember how long that movie, let's say an hour and a half, the movie was, some give or take around that time frame. You went almost an hour and a half without seeing this thing. So I think that's what, even though it's, you know, a creature with no verbal ability, isn't talking, isn't really like acting, can still have an impact with a character in short time frame. George, what were your thoughts on this?
I always think of this one, it's like, you don't see that monster a good chunk of the first half of the movie. You know, a lot of it really is just atmosphere. Ridley Scott really understood that. And that's what you get from most of his movies in the early days. Atmosphere plays a huge part of it. That's almost a bigger character than the thing that we're talking about. It doesn't surprise me that such little time. But it is like, when think of a real monster in movies, you know, like, it's hard to think of really big iconic monsters outside of Universal that are really grotesque monsters. The Xenomorph was like one of those first ones I always think of. And it's true, like everything you just said, it's like having that minimal screen time just really amped it up. So like in that last, what's that last moment when you think she's escaping and everything, and in that dark patch in the background, you just see the shine of its head kind of peeking out from that. It's like it's a rat in a freaking pinhole, you know, just coming out, and you're slowly seeing it. It's like it just builds up. It's like, holy shit, like she didn't escape. It's right there. It's right there. And if you needed that through that whole movie of never seeing it, to have that moment of like, holy shit, it's real. It's happening right now.
Dan, what about you?
Probably the best performance out of all these performances you're going to be mentioning is the Xenomorph, from my unbiased point of view. No, but that moment, even what you're talking about, George, it's like you don't fully see the big height of the monster, of the creature, until that very end when it's like, oh my God. So the thing that I love about this is that they took a page out of Jaws, where you don't show it and you start to build the good atmosphere, you start to build the hype of the monster, of the creature, and then you start, when you start to get like little visions of it and you start to tease it, you as the audience is starting to build up the mystique of this creature and this monster. And the great thing about the xenomorph is that it's such a weird, unique looking design that no matter what we think it looks like, there's no way nobody nailed it. Like nobody nailed this thing. So when you see when it's all weird and deranged, that was the most freaky looking alien I've ever seen at that age. Cause I'm like, well, that's an alien. Cause we usually say the big headed ones from like Fire in the Sky, you
the
know,
gray man.
Like,
oh, the gray man. Yeah.
The gray man. Yeah. I've seen that before. I've never seen a xenomorph before. And it absolutely looks like the perfect killing machine, the way that they had designed it and the way that they originally created it. So that's why Prometheus pisses me off, because they said, we created in a lab. It's like, no, you didn't, because it was a perfect killing machine that existed out there in space. Please let me live with that.
I think just to add to that, just to show how great that design was, I think back, Dan, you've mentioned it many a times, and it has to get mentioned again. Alien Resurrection. You know, maybe not one of the best of the franchise, but when they put the alien in the water, it's like, yeah, that makes total sense. That that design, I could totally see that thing in the water, and you're screwed. That's like a shark. Like, you just got this thing, this smooth torpedo just coming at you.
And the way it swims, too, is like, yeah.
And this was made in the 70s, and to see it in new atmospheres like that, and new areas, it made total sense. Like, it works. Like, it's like they knew in advance what they were doing with this creature.
I just rewatched that for the second time ever yesterday.
Just second? Oh, damn.
And what did you
because
think?
Because the first time I watched it, I was like, this isn't one and two. And then I just would always just do one, two, and then skip it. Skip all of them after that. It's better than I remembered. So that scene is fresh in my head.
Yeah.
When that last woman is in there and the xenomorph is coming, and I was like, don't even try.
My biggest fear, man.
I'm not going anywhere.
That's my biggest fear, is just drowning in water like that. And when you grab the ankle and you see her just getting pulled into the darkness, it's like, oh, that is petrifying.
Let's stick with the sci-fi aspect of this. And we have Darth Vader, New Hope. What are the times we think in here?
Let's go 23 minutes.
George?
Probably less.
That sounds like a long time, honestly.
Yeah, it does.
I want to go still single digits, I think, for him. I want to go like 9 minutes.
George is close. It's 12 minutes of screen time for Darth Vader. This is probably one of the most iconic characters that even people who are not Star Wars fans know Darth Vader. And it all started with these 12 minutes. So Dan, we'll start with you on this one. What were your thoughts on this performance?
You know, as the old quote goes, it only takes 12 minutes to fall in love with somebody. Maybe. I don't know. I might have read that from a fortune cookie. But the point is, Darth Vader is like perfectly captured like my youth when I was a child, and like opened up my fascination for sci-fi and movies and imagination and playing and everything. And Darth Vader was such the perfect epitome of villain, especially as a kid around that, because Darth Vader, even though he was like scary, he was never too scary for me as a kid. It didn't feel the way that when I first watched Freddy Krueger felt, right? Like with Darth Vader, it didn't feel as, he felt menacing, but like menacing isn't that type of villain or scariness. So there was like a powerfulness to him. Yeah. And then when you're voiced by James Earl Jones, has like that rich royal voice that he has, man, Darth Vader, like he created Star Wars. Like, yes, we had Luke. Yes, we had Han. Like, yes, we had lightsabers and Jedis, but it was Darth Vader. Like, that's what made Star Wars, is the fact that you had the aesthetic design of Darth Vader that really captured everything. Like, that's one of the best aesthetically designed villains we've ever seen. And I think he's the reason why Star Wars blew up to what it was, to the point where Hayden Christensen still keeps getting roles because he played Anakin when we were younger. Like, it spawned so many careers and stuff based off of him. But man, Darth Vader, like, you can't have a list of top three villains of all time and not have Darth Vader on it.
Unless it's a stupid list.
Yeah, whoa. That's right. Stupid list.
Stupid.
What about you, Jordan?
To tack onto that, you mentioned like his design. I feel like the way he looks, even ignoring James Earl Jones' voice, which is masterful, that look, that design, having that white backdrop of the Death Star, like everything in the Death Star is very bright, but he's this dark void. There's only a few bits of colors on him, and you have that helmet that just shines kind of like the Xenomorph's head. That silhouette, you know that silhouette, and then pair it with a red lightsaber. It's like, it's so, like you said, it's menacing. Like it stands out. I think of a void. I think of this emptiness that's just gonna swallow you, you know, kind of like a black hole. That's what he was for me watching him as a kid. And it's that small screen time. Every time you saw that silhouette come in, it's like, oh, that's it. Like we're about to get swallowed up because this guy's here and he means business. It's one of the things I hated about Return of the Jedi. As much as I love the original trilogy, that one moment when he has his mask off, it just took away the mystique of what part one gave us. Part one, having that just unknowing, this is him, this is it. Not if you took off the mask, there'd just be more darkness. That's what it was for me. You know, it was eternal darkness inside of him. That's what he represented. And I feel like everything after that kind of like just peeled that away. And I didn't like that. Like, I like having the idea of like, this guy is just evil. He is just the dark side. He's so much the dark side that he's all dark. Like even Palpatine has some white on his face. Not this guy. He is the dark side. That's what it was for me as a kid watching this guy.
That's the thing with this performance, is what it exudes. Like, if you think back at this character in the before, doesn't really do much, especially like physically. He doesn't really do much, but between the look, the voice, the delivery, heavy breathing, like you said, the lightsaber, the small little threatening actions that he does do, you feel how much of a badass this character is and how much of a threat they are without really seeing it on screen. You believe it from what everything you get from this character. And I think that's why, with just 12 minutes of screen time, like decades ago when this movie was done, and this character is still iconic from that. So, and like you said, you can't make a list of best villains, most iconic villains, whatever you want to call it, and not include Darth Vader.
Yeah, which in all credit to, like, we talk about James Earl Jones and stuff, but like Proust, who was the guy inside, like his stature added a lot to it. Like his movements, like it's not James Earl Jones was like, could you please move like this? Like, no, he's not telling him what to do. You know, this guy has to decide, like, I'm gonna move like this, I'm gonna put my hand out a certain way, you know, I'm gonna, you know, bring this bravado with my physicality, kind of like how Doug Jones does with every performance he does. You know, that's what this guy brought, and like he doesn't get enough, you know, credit to that. I think that's very important.
Have you
Yeah,
seen the footage where you hear his voice?
it's not as good as James Earl Jones. It's not.
No,
That's
it's
why
not.
Lucas is like, oh no, we'll fix it in post.
Yeah. Poor guy shows up to the premiere thinking that it was his voice.
I
he
know.
didn't know until he's watching it. He's there with his mom watching the movie. It's like, ah, oh, man. That's funny.
Lucas was there, was like, oh, good voice, not good look. Ooh, good look, not good voice. Bring them together.
Which is crazy because like James Earl Jones is not a small guy. It's
No,
not...
yeah.
He's not a small guy. And at that time, like, he was leaner too. So it's like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. So sticking with villains, here we go. We see this list. It's a lot of villains that don't have a lot of screen time. So sticking with that, Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs. What do we got for time frames?
8 minutes.
Okay. 8 minutes, George.
I'm gonna price this right, you, but in the opposite way, 7 minutes.
Well, they were both too low. It was actually 12 minutes of screen time.
12,
Not off
that's a
by
popular
much.
number, huh? 12 and 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. Start with you on this one, George. What were your thoughts on Anthony Hopkins and what he was able to do with those 12 minutes?
That dude is so sinister in this movie. Like everything I've watched him in afterwards, and even before, because I've seen him in other things when he was younger. But for some reason in this movie, man, just that, you know, the thing and all that stuff, like just the little stuff that he does with his face and his vocals. I was like, damn, this guy is freaking. I don't even want to talk to him between glass or bars. Like, it's kind of like I understand why Jodie Foster was afraid of him. Like, she was literally afraid. Like, I get it. It's like he seems like kind of nuts in his eyes. Like to know with your eyes what to do, it's always amazed me when it comes to acting. You know, like me and Jose, we come from like that world of stage and stuff. And like with stage, you're not thinking about your eyes so much as your body. You know, it's like I have to do extra here, but to have that kind of control with this, I feel like he totally nailed it just with that alone. Never mind just how his vocals and how he just talked about certain things to her and explained things and the way he was questioning her, just all of it, just like, who's in charge here? It's just not her, apparently. You're the prisoner, but it seems like you're the guy in control this whole time. So like when you watch other movies and he escapes, it's like, yeah, of course you escaped. Like you probably sweet talked your way out of that prison, didn't you?
Ben, what about you?
Yeah, so for me, it's how menacing he was, as we've talked about, but he would fall under the category of top three for me of best villains. The way that he really scared her in real life, and Jodie Foster is like a phenomenal actress. She was amazing. You know, she's award-winning. But the fact that Anthony Hopkins was still able to terrify her to that level, even on set, the whole how he escapes is one of the most darkest scenes, I think, in cinematic history. And it's movies like that that have pushed the envelope, or at least set the bar, I should say, that made movies chased. So now we've seen, you know, how many doppelgangers have we seen or projects that have tried to duplicate how dark and evil and stuff that you know Hannibal Lecter has been. But this movie set the bar for that, so that other ones a lot oftentimes feel like they're being like a copycat, right? Like it feels like, okay, you're trying to do what they did here. This was so clearly a cat and mouse game. And even when you rewatch the movie, there's so many things that are said through dialogue, but there's far more many things that are done through physicality and the things that they share on screen and the off looks and the fear and all that's done on camera. So, man, Anthony Hopkins, man, Sir Anthony Hopkins.
And that's true. You make a good point. You know, after that, you've got in so many movies, TV shows, things where you have, you know, the serial killer who, you know, they need to go to help them solve a crime and start slowly manipulating the person. It became a trope after that, the very popular one, but no one's delivered it like Anthony Hopkins. And what makes his performance so good is you look at Anthony Hopkins, you pull him out of that movie, you look at Anthony Hopkins and you're like, no threat there. You're not at all fearing when you look at Anthony Hopkins. You put him in that role and there's a fear to it. There's a like uncomfortableness to it of like, I can't turn my back to this guy. So you ignore what he physically looks like because of what he was able to present with this character. And you can tell some of those reactions from Jodie Foster's are natural reactions to what she is seeing in front of her. That, you know, she probably got some chills herself. And to think that character, again, like some of these other ones, remembered but decades after, people still remember this character. And it was 12 minutes of screen time. 12 freaking minutes in there. That's not even a third of a sitcom show in there.
He's
And
not even the main bad guy of the movie.
To be honest, there's a lot of people that I've talked to. They don't remember who the main bad guy is from the movie. They remember Jodie Foster and they remember Anthony Hopkins. That was it. And that's what he was able to do with it.
I think another thing that made the Hannibal Lecter character so brilliant, like the idea of him, is that there was something so like elegant. Right. And even when I talk about like with his escape, you hear the operatic music and you hear like the poetry with him mixed with the macabre. Like you see the dark, the vile, the evil. And I think that movie perfectly captures what we see. 'Cause when we normally think of the other villain that's in that movie, that Buffalo Bill, like they're almost feral. They're almost like dumber than our hero. But
Dirty. They're very dirty too.
they're very dirty, but they're savage. The thing about him that's so scary is that he's smarter than you. He's way more intelligent than you. But usually when you get something like that, like maybe you'll get like a lion, let's say, right? That like, you know, perfectly pounces, but there's something very elegant about it. The thing that's so scary about him is that there's a feralness to him on top of him being so intelligent. So even the way that consumes his prey. I'm trying to make sure that we don't get flagged here. Yeah. The way he consumes his prey and the way he eats his meals, let me say, there's a dirtiness to it, but it's done so eloquently that he's still that smart, intelligent being. But when you deal with something that's so feral in a certain way, it's scary because they lose the human. You know that they're not thinking with human emotions. So there's no way to, you know, if you beg them, if you plead for them, it's going, they're not listening, right?
Yeah, there's like, no rationalizing.
Yeah. As intelligent as he is, he gets that feralness in his eyes that when he sort of locks on like a shark to blood, that's what's so damn fascinating about his character that we just don't get. And later, you've seen so many villains and actors and whatnot that have tried to capture that.
And when you see his feral side, it's now too late.
Exactly.
You.
Yeah.
Your scalp is already open.
It's already open, my friend. You're already getting a haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what this list is for. You know, I thought this would be a good topic to talk about because, you know, sometimes you can do a lot more with less if you've got the right performer in there. And it doesn't matter how a character is written. If the right actor is there and can make the most of it, can, you know, become the character and improv little moments like you talked about with Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, can create a presence, can steal a scene and focus attention on yourself. It doesn't matter if you're in the movie for an hour and 10 minutes or you're in the movie for 8 minutes. You can still make an impact.
So let's do what's on the queue. So what's a movie that you recommend to our listeners, that one that maybe captured a really, really good performance and you think it's definitely worth, whether the movie itself was okay or not, leave that up to you, but the performance itself was so fantastic. George, do you want to go first?
Sure. You know what? I'm not going to say one that we said today. I'm going to switch it up a bit. Mm-hmm. We mentioned a lot of bad guys out there. I'm going to drop it to some of the good guys. I'm going to go with my boy Michael Peña, all right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go with a movie that's not necessarily a great movie, but any Ant-Man movie you want to choose, one or two, it doesn't matter. That boy steals the show. I am in to watch those movies just to watch him give me the cliff notes to whatever it is that we're going to see.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. All right. Jose?
I'll throw in a show stealer also. I'll go with Tom Cruise, Tropic Thunder.
Yes.
This is someone who was able to do a lot and make himself memorable with very little.
Good. Yeah, good one. I'm going to go with one that when I hear this topic, this is one that I automatically envision in my head when we talk about limited role, because this actor had one scene in the entire movie, and that movie is Glengarry Glen Ross, and this is Alec Baldwin. This is a movie that had Al Pacino in his prime, and you had Alec Baldwin that was in one scene. Just one scene with a set of brass balls, and he's going off talking about the ABCs, always be closing, and the way he just berates and belittles all the men that are in that scene. And you got some fantastic, like, legendary actors, but man, Alec Baldwin steals that scene. So that alone is just worth watching the movie. Even though the movie's good, that performance is amazing. So there you go. So let's put a pin in it. So on that note, thank you for watching another episode of Not a Strong Start. Please like, subscribe, comment, share on the YouTube channel, Not a Strong Start. You can listen to us anywhere you listen to your podcast. You can follow us on Instagram, at Twitter, Not a Strong Start. I'm your host, in and out, and in again. You can follow me at King_Sangre.
And I am Not Your Host, here and gone. And you can find me at This Is Mi Nombre on Instagram.
And I'm your other guy, here for a good time, not a long one. You can follow me at Nicolopolis.